This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Good evening to you all, and thanks for joining us this evening. How many of you believe, but really genuinely believe, that you are... You're a bit of a godel. That you have some greatness and you're getting greater. Nobody. So that either means it's not a very Canadian thing to do, to believe that one's great, or that we're very modest and we don't acknowledge it, or that we don't know that we are. We're entering an era, and this is what I want to talk to you about. We're entering an era where being great is no longer an option. And in fact, being great is going to become the only way we can influence people that we need to influence. And when we discover our greatness and we grow that greatness and manifest that greatness, the people that we need to lead will follow us effortlessly, and we will find that we're able to attract brocha and siyata dishmaya in ways that we were not able to do before. And brocha and siyata dishmaya manifests as people and the forces of the world all collaborating to help us achieve our goals. And greatness, being great, and we'll talk about what being great means. Being great is one of the most important tools, if not the only one we're going to have, to be able to achieve our goals. And we'll discuss this evening. That the ways we used to be able to achieve our goals can no longer be used. And we'll discuss why that is so, and what we've got to do instead of that. What a world it will be when people use their greatness to lead by instead of fear and control. Imagine that. Managers in businesses using their greatness, not don't have to use fear and control. Parents, teachers, not having to use fear and control. Just being able to lead by their own greatness. Imagine what that is. And that's something that I've really dedicated myself to do, is to help people identify their greatness and grow their greatness and lead by their greatness, so they don't need to rely on fear and control, which in any case is becoming ineffective. This evening we're going to discuss it in relationship to our interface with today's new generation that is different from any new generation that's ever been. Now we know that always the old people say, oh, the young people, and in our days it wasn't like that, and they will never be like us, and we were the... That's been in every generation, but this is different. And we need to realize that the barrier between the old generation and the new generation is a much bigger barrier than has ever existed before between two generations. And when we talk of the new generation and the old generation, where do you think we're drawing the line? At what age? Sorry? No, 30 is old generation.
10.
No? Between 25 and 27. Under 25 to 27 is the new generation, and over 27 is the old generation. Why is that? Why is that age so significant today? Because what year were the under 25-year-olds 5 years old? What year was that? That must have been 1988, I think. Is that right? In 1988, the 25-year-olds were 5. What was going on in 1988? The internet. So these are kids who don't understand how the world could have worked without the internet. They don't understand. They're not able to conceive how the world could have worked without the internet. Now, it doesn't matter if your 10-year-old or 15-year-old is very frum and has no access to the internet. Don't think that his brain doesn't operate the same way. He also doesn't know how the world operated before the internet, even though he might be living with one, without one, as far as you know. And we're going to be talking about the interface with this generation in three areas. And that is, how do you educate them, how do you manage them, and how do you parent them? Because in those three areas, the models we used to use no longer work. And we're going to have to use different models. But the exciting thing of what we're going to discuss tonight is it's not a matter of changing our Masoira. The things that we've been raised with as to how to raise children and educate them, we've now got to change to become modern. We've got to change back to the way it used to be, is what I'm going to show you. That in fact, the methods of educating that the Torah recommends and we have never followed in recent history is the only method of parenting and education that will work in the future. And we'll discuss why. To understand that, we also need to understand two things. The first thing is, look around the room. Are there any, apart from the women who are present, is there anybody here who's under 27, 25? Moshe, a few people. Okay. Apart from those who've got their hands up, look around the room, because you're looking at the last remnants of a species that will never exist again. It's a very interesting time of history. We are actually at the end of a species whose evolution has come to its end. That's it. The next generation is not a continuation of us. There's something different. And why that's happening, if one wants to look at it from a mystical perspective and so on, where the world's going to and why the Rebbeinu Shlom is directing it, that's a different discussion. You don't need a whole lot of chokhmah to figure that out. But what's clear is, and we'll discuss it in a lot more detail, is that the species that we represent as over 27-year-olds will never exist again. You'll never see us again. And it's important, I'm saying it in a very dramatic way, because the first condition of being able to manage leading the new generation, whether we're leading them as parents, leading them as educators, or leading them as managers, the first requirement is to get it into our heads that they're not of the same species as we are. They're not of the same culture, they don't come from the same planet. If we get that into our heads, we have a chance. If we don't get that into our heads, we're going to try and force them to become like us, and they can't. It's not possible. And so we're forcing them into a mold they can't fill. And then there are all the consequences of that, some of which we've already begun to see in our society. The second thing we need to understand is that at the same time as we're ending a species, which is us, we're also ending a very long era where power and influence was a function of control. The way you had power and the way you influenced was a function of how much control you had. And power and influence is no longer a function of control. The people in the future who will be power and influential are not people who have control. It will be people who have given up control. And we're going to have to learn, so what do you do instead as a parent? What do you do if you don't have control of your children? What do you do as an educator if you don't have control of your classroom? What do you do as a manager if you don't have control of your employees? But let's get it into our heads. Just accept it for the moment as a principle. We'll deal with it further on. This is another thing we have to get into our heads. Control is not an option. It doesn't exist anymore. It's old. It was for our generation. It was for another species. It doesn't work with the new species. You can't control them. The question is, what do you do? What do you do if you can't control them? That's what we're going to discuss this evening. Would that be helpful if we're able to understand how to influence people we cannot control and how to interface with a species we do not understand? If we can do that in the next 45 minutes, that might be helpful. Would you agree? Okay? If not, you must leave, because then you're wasting your time, because that's what I'm doing for the next 45 minutes. Let's first have a look at the species. Why is it a different species? The first thing to understand is that young people today are not a younger version of the adults. That's what we need to appreciate. And that's never been in history before. In history always, young people have been little adults. Given the time, they'll become big adults. And if we give them our knowledge, if we transfer our knowledge and experience to them and give them the time to mature, they will be able to take our places in the world and continue the work that we're doing. That's been the model over centuries and centuries. That's no longer so. They're not little versions of us. They will not be like us when they're big. And perhaps the hardest thing for the parental ego is they have no desire to be like us when they're big. No desire, they don't want to, they don't admire it, they don't aspire to it. It's not what they want. In fact, they can't figure out what got into our heads to be the way we are. Why did we spend 30 years working in a career to get to a place where we've kind of just about paid off our debts and now we're ready to start looking after in retirement? What did we do for 30 years? Why did we do that? Why did we allow other people to direct us the way they did? Why did we give away our power? Why did we give away our freedom? They can't figure us out. As perplexed as we are about them, they're even more perplexed about us. When I talk about us and them, I'm talking about the over 27-year-olds and the under 27-year-olds. But and of course, it's not a line that's exactly at that point, but you get what I mean. So they're not younger versions of us, and given time, they won't become like us. And part of the reason is because they don't operate linearly. They operate exponentially. And I like to call them the exponential generation, EGEN. They operate exponentially. They know people who became billionaires overnight. They know people like that. I'm not just talking about two or three heroes in Google. They're on television every day and they're talked about by their classmates. There are thousands of them around the world. And it wasn't only through technology. It was through the media and it was through entertainment and it was all sorts of different ways. They know kids their age who are already millionaires. That's who they're looking up to. Not their parents who took 30 or 40 years to pay off their mortgages. That's not what they're looking at as the financial heroes. They're looking at their mates, and they know it's possible. It doesn't mean they'll all do it. Some will do it, will try, and they'll fail, and they'll try again, and they'll fail, and they'll try again, and they'll fail, and then they'll do it. Some will never do it, and they'll have to go back to the old-fashioned way of doing things and get a job. But it doesn't matter. At this point in their lives, they know it's possible. And they know we don't think it's possible. Because we keep saying to them, what are you going to do with your life? What are you going to do? How are you going to make a living? What do you plan to do at university? And what do you want to do afterwards? And they don't get the question. Because it's not a linear line. That's not how it works. I don't know what I'll do. I'll figure something out. And we say, Dana, that's not how the world works. And they say, Nebuch is still kind of in that world where that's not how the world used to work. Now it is how the world works. And they're willing to take those risks and they're willing to take those chances. We see a little bit of it with infants. If we educated infants, children, little children, the way we educate bigger children, I believe they would never walk and never talk. Because the way they learn to talk is the way the E generation believes they can make money. Try something, you fail, you pick yourself up, you try again, doesn't work, figure out why it doesn't work, try it again. And they move on, and so they develop. And that's how they develop language. If we would say to them, don't open your mouth until you can construct a sentence, because you'll make an idiot of yourself. So you figure out, you go to school first and learn language and then speak. What would happen? Then learn how to walk properly before you try and walk. It's too dangerous. Go to walking school. We don't do that. We let them experiment. And so there's a natural force. What we see in the E generation is the liberation of a natural force of experimentation and journeying. And they understand the exponential. They understand you don't have to follow the linear line. They understand you don't have to work through a career. They understand you don't have to take a long time to achieve something. You can achieve results instantly. That's what's one of the things that are different about our time. You can achieve results instantly. Yesh koine oilomo b'shor achas. This is in the Torah. It's possible to get an entire oilom habo in 1 second. Now I ask you, what's bigger, an entire oilom habo or an entire oilom hazeh? So if you can get an oilom habo in a second, why can't you get an oilom hazeh in a second? They know you can. We don't believe that. We probably don't even believe you can get an oilom habo in a second. If we believed it, we would do it. So we have an emunah problem. They don't. They understand things work exponentially. You can achieve results in a non-time-related method. Results is not a function of time. Doesn't have to be a function of time, is one of the things they understand. Yes, there are certain things that do have to be a function of time. You want to make good wine? It takes a few years. There are certain things that are functions of time, and they accept that. But many, many areas that we believe are functions of time, they do not believe are functions of time. That's one of the differences. The second difference is it's the first time in history that the young generation know more than their parents in areas that are crucial for the future. So I've often asked leaders in organizations to enumerate the qualities that are most valuable in a person they want to employ for the future. What are the qualities that person will need? And they come up with things such as innovation and inventiveness and ability to relate cross-culturally and imagination and technological ability and capability. Those are the kind of things that they talk about, and we list them. And then we go through and say, in these areas, who has greater capability? A young 19-year-old kid who hasn't even been to college, or you? You go through, you very, very quickly realize that in nearly all of the capabilities that are crucial for the future, a young, uneducated 19-year-old has more than a 35 or 45 or 55-year-old PhD. Doesn't mean that the older generation has nothing to offer. I'm not suggesting that for a moment. I'm just saying there's some very big differences in the generational divide today and previously, because for the first time, in areas that are crucial for us in the future, the young generation knows more than we do. That's never been before. And what's even more astonishing about it is, we can't make them think like us, and they can't make us think like them. It's kind of too late. We can do all sorts of things, and they can do all sorts of things. But they can't give us their capability, and we can't give them their capability, and we can't give them our capability. Not instantly, anyways. And we'll discuss the consequence of that. So the first thing is that they are not a younger version of us. They are not just further down the time continuum, and given time they'll be like us. They'll never be like us because they're on a different continuum. They're not on our continuum. The second one is that they know more than their parents do. The third one is that they understand the future better than we do. And understanding the future is one of the most important capabilities in coping, not with the future, but coping with the present. Because as my son said to me, you don't get it, he said, the future is not tomorrow, the future is today. The future used to be tomorrow. The future isn't tomorrow anymore, things are happening too quickly. The future is today. If you think you've got today to get ready for tomorrow, then you're over 27. If you're under 27, you'll understand that you do not have today to get ready for tomorrow. Tomorrow is already today, and who understands tomorrow better? A young kid that understands the capabilities of technology, or an older person who's still rooted in the past? So what we have to do then is begin to understand that, number one, our children are not on the same continuum as we are, they're on a different continuum. They know more than us in areas that are crucial for us going forward, and they understand the future in ways that we do not. And they understand the potential of the future. They can imagine the future in places, they can take their imagination to places about in the future that we can't even conceive of. And the fourth is that they either have a different cognitive process, or they might even be differently neurologically structured, is what a lot of the research is finding. They certainly have a different cognitive process. They might even have a different neurological structure. Those are the four areas in which they are different species. Because different cognitive process means we're not on the same wavelength. That's another way of saying we're not on the same wavelength. And different neurological structure, that has even more consequence. And that certainly means that it's difficult to get onto the same wavelength. So that's the area of being different species. What about the question of control? Why have we lost control? What is it that's caused us to lose control? Well, let's go over the things that we used to have control of. In the old days of the agricultural era, we used to control people by space, by boundaries. And then we moved into the industrial era when we started to control people by resources. The people who controlled the resources that others needed had the power. That was in the industrial age. Then we moved into the information age. And the information age, it was no longer that important. Boundaries weren't that important because globalization started happening. And resources weren't that important. What was much more important was information. Because with information, you could manage resources and you could access resources. So power was held through knowledge and through information in the information age. But now we're through with the information age. We're in the post-information age. Everybody's got information. There's no shortage of information. Once everybody's got information and everybody's got access to information, there's no power in having information. There's no control in having information. So we've lost control of all the things we used to use to control people by. Boundaries don't apply that much. You can't control people's space anymore. In the old days, you could lock your kid in the house and then he couldn't go outside. But you can't anymore lock the outside from coming into the house. So it doesn't matter whether he's inside or he's outside the house. He could be sitting inside the house, and where is his head? His head could be anywhere in the world, speaking to anybody in the world, and imagining things that you haven't even thought of. That's where he could be, even though he's locked up in his room. So space isn't a means. You can't control people by space anymore. You can't control resources. You can't control information. So where's power going to be? Power is going to be in two capabilities. The first capability is in the ability to collaborate. If you can collaborate well with people, you will have power. The second is in the ability to make sense of information. So everybody has access to information, but not everybody can make sense of information. That was the beginning of the chiddush of Google, was some form of making sense of infinite information. Now, of course, it doesn't make sense of it yet from a values perspective, but it makes sense from it to some degree from an organizational perspective. And that's going to have to go a lot further. So if we look at those two areas and we say power is going to come not from control of resources or control of information or control of time, power is going to come from the capacity to collaborate and to make sense of information. What do you need to collaborate? What is the quality you most need to collaborate? What would you say?
Social skills.
More than that. More than social skills. You have to go further, sorry?
Midah.
What kind of midahs? What is the midah you're going to need more than anything else for collaboration? Your listening is going to be one of the powers that you're going to need, one of the skills? Respect, almost there. One further. You're going to need respect, sorry? Another you're going to need. These are all subcategories. The main thing you're going to need is trust. People are going to have to trust you to collaborate with you. And you're going to have to know who to trust. So the ability to trust and be trusted is going to be a source of power. Now do you understand why I've said greatness is not an option? Because trust can't be faked. Trust has to be real. You need the anova, and you need the ability to listen, and you need all the things we've talked about, and a whole lot more. You need midas. You need to be in the last pages of Mesillas Yesharim. It's not an option. This is not about sitkas anymore. This is about business success. Without that, you're not going to have power. Because all the forces of control no longer give you power. The only thing that will give you power is the ability to collaborate, and for that you need gadlus. For that you need greatness. And the second area was to make sense of information. What do you need to make sense of information? Of infinite information. What do you need to make sense of it? To filter it into something that is meaningful. You need an integrated and robust value system, don't you? Isn't that so? So that you can put things in and decide what's important and what is not important. What is worth spending time on and what is not worth spending time on. What belongs together and what doesn't belong together. Where do two ideas come together? So you're going to need a philosophical framework, which is a value system that can give meaning to information. Because information without meaning doesn't give power. Everybody's got access to information without meaning. People who can give meaning to information are going to have power. But to give meaning to information, you need to have a value system. And you might say, well, that's very good because we Jews and Orthodox Jews, we've got a good value system. I did a survey among American school kids about 8 years ago in 10th to 12th grade, and I asked them, we broke them up into separate groups, and we really asked them separately and researched it quite deeply to give us the three most critical challenges that face teenagers in the United States. And they said three things. One of them is not surprising, two of them were shocking. And it took me a long time to understand them. The first thing they said was drugs. That's not the one that's not surprising. These were yeshiva students, yeshiva high school students. The second one they said, which is shocking and we're not going to discuss it tonight, was intermarriage. Okay, just think of what the implications of that are. And the third thing was we don't have a value system. Our parents and teachers are raising us with a set of rules but without a set of values. That was astonishing. So let's not assume that we're raising our kids and ourselves with a value system. We're raising our kids and ourselves with a set of rules. Whether the rules come from the Torah or the rules come from somewhere else, for the purposes of tonight's discussion, make no difference. It's not a value system that you can use to make sense out of information. And we might have to change the way we operate in order to do that. But those are to the areas where we begin to understand if collaboration and giving meaning to information are the two sources of power, then trust and a value system are the two keys, and trust and a value system both require greatness. So becoming great as a human being, and that's not something that can be faked, it's not superficial, it's got to be deep, authentic, and real. Developing our greatness of character as human beings is not an option if we want to be effective going forward. It's an absolute strategic necessity, which is really interesting. The world has never been in such a state before. Yes?
Some people really can, the children can really emulate a parent, but if they respect and admire and they...
Very good. We're going to come to that. Very good. We're going to come. Absolutely right. Let's start with education, then we'll move on to management, and thirdly we'll talk about parenting. Let's start with education. The important thing about education is that there's a number of people who have done work in that area. There's a man called Mark Prensky who's been doing work in the area for the last 7 years. He's a designer of computer games, and therefore has got into the cognitive process of this new generation, to understand how they think and how they operate, and has done a lot of work in collaboration with neurosociologists and neurosurgeons in order to actually work out what's going on. And what typifies the new generation's cognitive process are three elements of surplus and one of deficit. There are four areas, three at which they excel and one at which they lack. Let's have a look at the three at which they excel. The first is they think by hyperlink. Now, anybody who's used the internet understands how hyperlinking works. That's how they think. Now, we think that's very odd to think that way. But even old people like us, when we explore, we do that by hyperlinking too, don't we? You're walking down a mountain path, you're going on a hike, and you're planning to go from point A to point B, and then you see a little path on the side. And it seems to be going out to a nice vista, so you take it. You don't say, I'm sticking to the path, I've got to go on the path, that's where I'm going, not being off the path. There's something attractive, you go. And now you're at the vista and you see there's a path that goes the way down to a little waterfall down below. So you follow that. And while you're at the waterfall, you meet a group of people who say, oh, you've got to go down that path, because if you go down that path, there's a beautiful sight that you've seen there, and the most magnificent trees and flowers. And so you go down that path. That's how we explore. Well, kids explore information the same way. Completely natural. Hyperlinking is completely natural. The way we've been doing it for the last few thousand years isn't natural. To try and structure information linearly, you go to this, and then you go to that, and then you go to that, and then that's not natural. To hyperlink is natural. So the first thing they're really good at is hyperlinking. The second thing that typifies the way they think is a cognitive structure that embraces parallelism rather than sequential thinking. That means they can think simultaneously along several tracks. Whereas the old way of thinking is linear. You finish this, and then you move to the next thing. You finish that, bring it to closure, and you move to the next thing. The new generation doesn't think that way. The new generation thinks parallelly, simultaneously along several tracks. Their parents call that ADD and give them medication because they don't get it. They don't understand. Now, I'm not suggesting that there isn't really a clinical thing called ADD and doesn't sometimes need medication. But when you walk into a classroom and more than 50% of the kids are on Ritalin, that's not about ADD. That's about parents who don't get it. That there's a shift has taken place in a way of thinking and the educational system is not yet adjusted. So they're called crazy. Well, then you're in for a surprise this evening. Okay, then you're in for a pleasant surprise this evening. So the next thing is parallel thinking. They can think parallelly. They can do, so not only can they think about several things at once, they can do several things at once. So when they're sitting at the dinner table and they're texting their friends at the same time, it's not because they're not listening to you. They can hear every word you're saying. Can they concentrate in the same way as we used to be able to concentrate? Maybe not. But then they're getting two things done at once, or three or four things done at once. That's not bad. There was an old generation guy, he's about 40, who told me that he went out, he took his daughter's boyfriend out for dinner. He wanted to get to know him a little bit, so he took him out for dinner. And they had a really good conversation. They were busy talking, it was quite deep, it was quite intense. And then the boyfriend dropped him home, the father home. And as he got out of the boyfriend's car, his cell phone went, the father's cell phone went, and it was his daughter. And she says, "Oh, how did it go? I heard you had this for starters and this for main course, and I heard you talked about this and that." He says, "How's that possible? I've left your boyfriend this second. I've just closed the car door." She says, "Don't be silly. He was texting me as you were talking." He wasn't even aware of it. There was no deficiency in the conversation. He was busy doing something parallelly and being able to maintain two conversations simultaneously. And we hear stories, this is like a Reb Chaim Ozer-Grudzinski kind of a thing. And right with the right hand and with the left hand to be able to think parallelly, it used to be a thing that one in a generation could do. And now kids can do this. They have that capability. They can think in many areas at the same time. I'm not making judgments, is it good, is it bad, would it be better if they just did one thing at a time? It's irrelevant. I'm just stating what is. Because if we understand what is, we'll be able to manage what is. If we try and make what is into what used to be, we're going to lose it. So we need to just understand what is. Whether we like it or not is not really the subject of tonight. So the first thing is they hyperlink, and the second is they have parallel rather than sequential cognitive structure. The third thing is immediate interactivity. Right? They can't sit with a book and just sit and stare at a book. There's got to be interaction. The book has to do something. So they've got to be sitting at a computer. And we say, "Yeah, just sit and read. Just take your time." It's not how their brain works. Their brain works through interactivity. So, hyperlinking, parallel structures, interactivity. Those are the surpluses. The deficiency is in the area of reflection. They can't sit quietly and reflect. Absorb it, think about it, let it settle, go deep. That's what they struggle with. So there's the area of the cognitive structure of the new generation. Now let's think for a moment. Here we find something very amazing. Let's look at Gemara. Is the structure of Gemara hyperlinked or linear? Both? It's certainly not linear. Okay, Mishnayos is linear, Gemara is not. Mishnayos is shash, shisho sedorim. Seder means linear. Rebbe structured the Mishnah into a linear process of Zroim comes before Moed, Moed becomes before Noshim, Noshim comes before Nezikin. In each Seder there are Mesechtas, each Mesechta is broken down. But go and try and break a sugya down. Now I know that in some of the modern teaching that's what they try and do, to break the sugyas down and to show relationships. We're trying to make it linear. We're trying to fit Gemara into Western thinking and teach it that way, because Western people find Gemara very, very difficult. They find Gemara difficult because it's not linear. That's why we've always found Gemara difficult. Somebody who's raised in Gemara from childhood does it naturally. But when an older person starts studying Gemara after he's been to university, he has to restructure the Gemara in a linear way. And then you get all these diagrams. Why didn't we have all these diagrams before? All these English books, now you open up book after book, there are diagrams that show you, and this is how it's structured, and this comes before this, and this is how... Why did nobody need that before? Because Baal Tshuvas are learning. So what? Why can't Baal Tshuvas learn the same way that we've learned for the last few thousand years? Because they've been trained to think linearly. And now we throw them into a different kind of reasoning. Sometimes there will be two adjacent sugyas in the Gemara that have nothing to do with one another other than that the same Amora said them. That the same word is used. That's all. We're learning a piece in Psochim at the moment in the third Perek. And the Gemara says, why? The Mishnah gives a rule. Why does it have to mention a particular detail of the rule? Kutach, as it talks about. Certain type of dish made of milk and chometz. We don't need it. It doesn't add anything. Giving the example doesn't add anything. The rule, the principle is there. We can extrapolate from that. Because it just wants you to know what kutach is made of. It's important to know the ingredients of kutach. So why put it in psochim? Because we happen to be talking about food and mixed up foods. That's a good place to put it. It's hyperlinking. You're talking about food, you're talking about chometz, you're talking about milk and chometz. Blue text with a line underneath. Click. Kutach. What's kutach made of? A, B, C, D. Okay, I know. Go back to the theme. I've got that piece of information. Gemara is a hyperlinked text. And we need to be able to get into Gemara in a different type of a way. There was an article just last week in Newsweek that talked about how important it is to redefine the way we see information. In the old days, we used to think of information as in a library. You go to a library, and there are catalogs, and there are shelves, and there are books, and in the books, in the library, there are sections, and the sections, there are shelves, and the shelves, there are books, and the books, there are chapters. That's how we pictured knowledge and information. Then we got into the computer age, and then we got a little bit confused, and then we came along with files. I don't remember if it was Apple who invented that first, or Microsoft who invented that first. We started with files. They're not really in files, but it was just easier for us to think of them in a file kind of a system. Then Google came along, and Gmail came along. What's the whole principle of Gmail? You don't have to file your emails away. It doesn't matter where they are. As long as you can pull them out. As long as you can search for them. That's the whole thing. There are too many files in any case. There's too much information to file. So forget about filing. Doesn't matter where it is. I would suggest to you Gemara is the same. All of Torah Shebaal Peh is thrown into this bin called Shas, placed in places where we would naturally hyperlink to them. Where it's natural to think about them. Not where they philosophically belong necessarily. Sometimes they philosophically belong there. But there are a lot of sugyas you don't have to sit and break your head and figure out, why is this there? This just as when you go into Google and you hyperlink, you don't have to figure out, I wonder why. Why is it that I'm looking up about motor cars and I hyperlink onto gas and I find myself in an article talking about Saudi Arabia? What's Saudi Arabia got to do with a car? Oh, I get it. Yes. But you don't have to go through that process. It's a hyperlink. That's all it is. It's a way of accessing information, not storing. Shas is not about storage of information. Shas is about accessing information. And therefore, the Gemara is a hyperlinking system of thinking, and it's much easier to teach Gemara to the new generation than it has ever been before. Provided we don't make the mistake of trying to teach it in a linear fashion. If we try now, because that's what we're busy doing, we're re-engineering Shas into something that the old fogies can understand, and now we're using that as the model for the young kids who don't need that re-engineered model because they understand it naturally. It's Gemara, that's the one. What about parallel or sequential cognitive process? What are you doing in Gemara? Can you possibly work on one thing only and finish that before you go to the next one? Or are you busy juggling several concepts at the same time, moving backwards and forwards between all of them? And the interesting thing of what kids can do in parallel thinking, it's a bit like a spreadsheet. So they've got these parallel lines going, and they might have 3 of them, or 4 of them, or 8 of them, or 15 of them. They've got these 15 lines of thinking going. They not only can think along these lines parallelly, they can think across them too, and find patterns across them. Which we could never do because we used to finish one before we started the next one. They see them all on the page like a spreadsheet. And they can see patterns all over the place. Isn't that how Gemara works? Where we're constantly seeing different themes at the same time. Isn't that what Tosfos is doing all the time? You're busy on one sugya and Tosfos throws in 4 other sugyas and says, hey, why don't you think about these at the same time? And if you think about them at the same time, you'll be able to answer some questions and you'll have to ask a whole lot of new questions. That's how it works. Parallel structures. That's what Gemara is. And the third thing is they're instantly interactive. Isn't that what Chavrusa is? That's how you learn. In yeshiva, you spend 1 hour in a shiur and 10, 11, 12 hours with a Chavrusa. That means 90% of your time is interactive. At maximum, 10% of your time. Maximum. And that's only for a few years. After a boy's been in shiur for 2 or 3 years, he learns the whole day by Chavrusa. He doesn't go to a shiur. He goes to a shiur once a week. What's that all about? Interactivity. So the 3 primary methods of the new generation's thinking are fundamental to Gemara learning and teaching. What about the 4th deficiency? They can't reflect. There we've got davening. Learn how to reflect. Learn how to stand still. Learn how to develop kavon. Learn how to go deep. Learn how to slow down and stop. We've got a Shabbos, a time for reflection. So the one area in which the new generation is deficient, we teach in Torah. And that's the area of reflection. So Gemara, for the first time, becomes not only something important for our Yiddishkeit, Gemara now becomes a strategic advantage for people in the world. And isn't it interesting to notice that today, Talmidei Chachomim are in demand in a number of different industries. The legal industry has recognized that they have a cognitive process that's very attractive if you can just teach them to speak English. And so has the technology area recognized that they have an ability to work with technology. You take a guy out of yeshiva who has no secular background, is being innovative in technology immediately. And the world of technology is getting to recognize that. It's not for nothing that many of the Haredim in Eretz Yisrael are employed in technology. Not just because it happens to suit their hours, it's because they are really good at it without training. And the little bit of training they need, they get very quickly. So here's a radical idea I would put to you. The modern model of education is much closer to the Cheder system than to any of the other models we've developed recently. The modern model should be, what do we need? What does a child need? So he needs Gemara. Gemara is just the most important thing we can give a child is excellence in the capacity to learn Gemara. I'm not suggesting we're doing that, by the way. Doesn't this mean put a guy in a shir or in yeshiva and he's going to learn all these methods of thinking? No, because we've got to have teachers who know what they're doing. Some teachers do, some do not. But let's assume that we're teaching Gemara in a proper way. We're teaching Gemara with parallel thinking, and we're teaching Gemara with hyperlinking, and we're teaching Gemara interactively, and they're getting all this, they're getting how to reason. So they've got the thinking process. Next, they need to be able to communicate. Very important. If we're going to collaborate with people, we have to be able to speak the language. And the language is not Lashon HaKodesh or Yiddish. So they need to know English. Which country has the biggest number of English-speaking people in the world? Sorry? United States? Any other guesses? China. China has more English speakers already than any other country in the world. And imagine where that's going. So you can speak Yiddish at home, you can learn in Lashon HaKodesh or in Yiddish in yeshiva, but you'd better know how to speak English and write English and read English well, quickly and well. That's the skill. So they need Gemara, they need English. They need math. They need to understand patterns and relationships, and they need to be able to relate to technology. They need good math. What else do they need? What else do they need that they learn at school that they can't find by themselves? If they have that. Leverage and what's it?
Collaboration into
it. Yes, so how to do that? But that they don't learn at school. Our current educational system is not teaching. That's something we've got to teach them in the future. But if you take the current educational model that we old generations have designed for us, the educational system is the system that people like us, dinosaurs, designed to educate little dinosaurs. But there are no little dinosaurs left. And we're educating a new species the way we used to educate dinosaurs. Can you imagine the last few dinosaurs left over? Is one allowed to say dinosaurs in Toronto? Can you imagine the last few little dinosaurs left over talking to each other and saying, you know, these new animals around here, they're going to have to learn. One day they're going to have to become dinosaurs. Otherwise, how are they going to survive? That's what we're busy saying. But educate these little kids. One day they're going to have to become like us. Otherwise, how are they going to make it? They won't have to become like us. So we've designed an educational system to make people like us, but they can't be like us. It's not even possible for them to be like us. So we've got to redesign the educational system. There's nothing we teach them in 12 years of school that they need other than Gemara, math, and English. And one other thing, a strong and healthy sense of curiosity. That's all they need. If they've got a strong sense of curiosity, language, math, which is the language of science, and Gemara, which is the thought process, they can excel at anything they want to do afterwards. So then at the end, if they want to go to college and become physicians, they'll take their GEDs or whatever the equivalent is in their country. It'll take them a year at most to cover the curriculum and to pass the examinations fantastically. They'll go into college and university and they'll do very, very well. They don't need 12 years of schooling for that. So we're looking at a very different model of education. How about curiosity? How do we teach curiosity? We teach curiosity, because curiosity can be taught also. The model for teaching curiosity is the Pesach Seder. And what we learn in the Pesach Seder is there are only three ways you can get somebody to listen to you without forcing them. Now, how much do people absorb when you force them to listen to you? Have you ever tried it? Zero. Okay, what they hear is in fact distorted. They distort what you're saying. They hear things you never said. Has that ever happened to you? That somebody has heard you say something you never said? Right? It happens to me all the time. And that's because you haven't accessed that. You haven't opened them up. They're there, you force them. You're trying to use control. How do you open curiosity? How do you get people to hear? There are only three things you can do. The one thing you can do is tell them a story. Have you ever heard of a person getting bored when you're telling a story? Every speaker knows the technique. If people are busy nodding off, tell a story. And everybody wakes up. Doesn't matter no matter what. You start telling a story, everybody wakes up. Everybody loves a story. Everybody listens to a story. In that way, the new generation is no different from the old generation. They also love stories. So you can tell a story. That's Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. The other thing you can do is, you can answer questions. If they're asking a question, you can answer. And what do you do if they're not asking a question? What is the Seder full of? Full of techniques to make Kadei Sheyishalu Atinoikos. Figure out a program, do a workshop that is designed to get people to ask questions because then they'll hear you. Those are the only things you can do. You can't lecture to people. You can only tell them stories, answer their questions, ask them questions or get them to ask questions. That's the only process that you can do. Yeah. Absolutely right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think that's a positive emotional capabilities of the child.
Well, it's not just the emotional capabilities. What that is doing is enabling the child to use his or her curiosity to learn all the things you're not going to teach them anymore. Because to teach children things they can find out, I mean, have you had professors or lecturers or teachers who come into the class and read out of a textbook? Have you ever had that? And how that's tolerated in an educational system, I've never been able to understand. Why do I have to pay you to read to me something that I've read myself or should have read myself or will read myself? What do I need you for? Why haven't you redefined your role? Now we've got to understand is I can read everything. There's no information you've got that I need that I cannot get without you, you being the teacher. So I don't need you for information. I need you for other things. I need you for inspiration. I need you for stimulation. I need you for guidance. But I don't need you for information. For information, you've got to give me curiosity, spur my curiosity, and give me the tools I need to explore and journey and find my own answers. That's what I need as a child. And for that, you need that classroom environment in which the child is free to explore, whether by asking a question or by looking something up in an encyclopedia or on the internet. Let's just rush through the management area because I want to get to the parenting area, but both of these areas won't take us long because we laid the foundations already. The important thing with management is also a major change is taken when you're managing this new generation. And now I'm talking about the best of the talent. I'm not talking about managing Nochschleppers. Managing Nochschleppers, they need the job, you give them the job, you try and motivate them however you can, that's easy. But the real competitive advantage in business now is to be able to attract and retain top talent. That's what's really going to be the difference. People who have talent and are able to envisage the future and make the future happen. That's what we've really got to become good at. And to do that, it's quite interesting because this new generation is no longer extrinsically motivated, they're intrinsically motivated. Now, we don't have time to go into that in detail, but very briefly, it means money and status and all the external things that have motivated us and others in the past no longer motivate them because they can get those things without the linear process. So if you say to a young guy, you stay working for me and you know what, one day I'll make you a partner. Do you think I'm going to stay with you until you make me a partner? I'm not interested in it. I'll own a business bigger than yours before you even think of making me a partner. I'm just here to learn as much as I can, as quickly as I can. That's what I'm here for. It's very different. They're motivated by intrinsic things, not by extrinsic things. And therefore, and they have choice. They don't have to work for you, they can work for somebody else. They can work for you for a while and then work for somebody else. In fact, they don't have to work for anybody at all. They can sit at home and buy and sell things on eBay. They don't need to come to work. There are enough things for a talented young person to do, not in the structure of a corporation or a firm. So they don't need you for the things they used to need you. They used to need you to make a living. They don't need you for that anymore. So what do they need you for? They need you for their own growth and for their own development. So if the person you're employing is somebody you need, but doesn't need you, and has choices, what is a good name for such a person? Somebody in business I need doesn't need me because they've got choices. What do we call such a person? Sorry?
Volunteer.
A volunteer? Nah. What do we call such a person? Where I come from, we call them customers. Isn't that right? They're no more employees. Talented employees are customers. You've got something to offer them. They've got something to offer you, and you establish a partnership, and you'd better make it worthwhile for them, just as they'd better make it worthwhile for you. And you work together to make it worthwhile. You treat them as customers. It doesn't matter if they're 16 or 17 or 19 and you're 50. It doesn't make a difference. How do you treat a young customer who's got a lot of money? Right? Many industries have already recognized that their main customers are sort of 15 to 19 year olds. And they've adjusted their whole industry accordingly. And how do they treat these kids when they come into their stores or buy on their sites? And they treat them very well, with a lot of respect and dignity, because they want to keep them. If we're going to treat employees as people we control because they need us, they can't get anywhere without us because we had to join a firm and it took us 15 years before we made partner, or it took us 15 years before we became a senior manager, they're going to do the same. And unless they let me mentor them, they're not going to be able to quite make it. We're not going to be able to attract and retain talent. We're going to have to treat young talent as customers and not as employees. A big shift. And what do you need to do that? What is the shift really? What does it require of you to make that shift? From treating this young 25-year-old as a customer rather than an employee. It's going to need anova. This really needs modesty. Because you've got to treat this person with a genuine sense of respect, although he's half your age and doesn't have your experience and knowledge. All of a sudden, you've got to start treating junior people with a lot of respect and a lot of dignity. That requires anova. Anova is part of greatness. So what did we say we're going to need? In order to collaborate, you're going to need to build trust. In order to make sense out of information, you're going to need a value system. And in order to attract and retain talent, you're going to need anova, you're going to need humility. And the third thing, parenting. If I were to ask those of you who are parents, how many of you believe you have control of your children? Who believes that they've got control of their children? Not one person in the room? If I were to have asked the same question of your parents or grandparents, how many would have put up their hands? Everybody would have put up their hands. So we've got to acknowledge we've lost control of our children. Now that's not because we're bad parents, that's because control no longer works. It's got nothing to do with being good or bad parents. That's just a proof that control no longer works. We've lost control of our children, and we need to acknowledge that. So what do we have in its place? How do we influence our children? There are a few things that we can do. We can give our children values, and we'll talk about very briefly about how to do that. Back to that survey that I did with high school kids, that they're missing values, they're not getting values. We can give our children values. We can set expectations for our children. Somebody told me today he was raised in Russia, and as a kid, how old was he at the time? 12, I think he said. He was 12, he was in Russia, he was put into a gymnastics class. I think there were 12 kids in the class. I think he was even younger. There were 12 kids in the class. And the teacher started off on the first class and said, Each one of you are here for one reason only. That is to win the Olympics. That's what you're here for, and I expect it of each of you. And not once, I expect it at least three times. That's the expectation we're setting. A parent can do that. A parent can create an expectation of a child that is there to win the Olympics. So the equivalent in the areas in which the child can excel. The third one is love. We can give our children love. And the fourth is build trust. Those are the only things we can do to influence our children. Give them a set of values by which to live by which to live. Set expectations to which they aspire. Provide them with love and build trust. That way we don't need to control them. The same as if you treat your employee as a customer, you don't need to control them. They will want to stay with you. Just treat them as customers, they'll want to stay. Because that's what we're trained all the time, is how to keep customers. Use the same strategies to keep employees. Just needs are not. So with children, you can't control children. But you can give them values, expectations, love and trust. But what do you need primarily for values? What's missing? Why do these kids say, we're not learning values at school and our parents aren't teaching values? Because the only way you can teach a value is how? And how do you demonstrate a value? How do you demonstrate that this is really important to me? And live it out under what conditions? You make it a priority, which means you put it ahead of other things and you do it at great expense, at great personal cost. That's the only thing that works. New generation kids like heroes. And you have to be a hero. Otherwise, they're not interested in following you. And a hero is somebody who's moser nefesh. That's what a hero is. And if you're moser nefesh for chinuch, they will pick up chinuch. They will pick up education. If you're moser nefesh for Shabbos, they'll pick up what Shabbos is. In the old days, people were moser nefesh for Shabbos, for kashrus. Today, that's no mesiris nefesh. You go into a supermarket, you buy whatever you want. There's no mesiris nefesh in kashrus. There's no mesiris nefesh for Shabbos, for most of us. So where's the mesiris nefesh now? For avodah zarah, to believe in Hashem, no mesiris nefesh. It's the cool thing. It's an in thing now to believe in God. That's not a big thing. To go to shul, that's not much of a mesiris nefesh. So where are the mesiris nefesh? The mesiris nefesh is in midas. The mesiris nefesh is in honesty. The mesiris nefesh is in midas. When a child sees a parent take a knock because they're not willing to compromise a value, that's when the child gets it. And for that, there's got to be greatness. So here again we see, just as for the purpose of collaboration, and this is one of the examples of, in order to collaborate with your children, you need to build trust. You can only build trust if you're teaching values for which you've been moser nefesh. If you haven't been moser nefesh, it doesn't matter what you say. It's irrelevant what you say. It's not a value until you've been moser nefesh for it. And if you have been moser nefesh, you become a hero. And if you're a hero, you can set expectations. They'll listen. A hero sets expectations for them. They'll want to satisfy the hero. But if you're not a hero, you can set expectations and they're not going to follow you at all. If you're a hero, your love is very meaningful to them. If you're not a hero, the love is less meaningful. If you're a hero, they trust you because there's consistency. And if we've built up values, expectations, love and trust, we can influence our children. We don't need to control them. And we can work with this new generation in a way that works with them rather than anything else. So in summary, we've got an influence we can't control anymore. This is no longer a time for control. We can't control anything anymore except ourselves. The only people we can control are ourselves. And it's interesting, in the eras up until now, we've tried to control everybody except ourselves. And now the Rebbeinu Shem is teaching us a lesson. Flip it. Don't control anybody except yourself. You're the only person you can control. Through controlling yourself, you can grow your greatness. And by growing your greatness, you'll influence everybody else. But don't try and do it the other way around. Don't think you'll get results by controlling them. You'll get results by controlling yourself, building your own greatness, and then they will follow you effortlessly. In education, engage. Don't inform. They don't need you to inform them. They're well enough informed, and they can get whatever information they need. So education is no longer about informing. Don't lecture to them. Don't teach them in the normal sense of the word. They don't need that anymore. That's not what they need you for. They need you to engage them. You engage them with story. You engage them with question. You engage them with answer, with thinking process, with English, with communication skills, with math, recognizing patterns. That's how you engage them. In management, don't control them, collaborate with them. And as parents, model, don't dictate. And in those three areas, we'll find if we're able to go through that transition and redesign the way we interface, not only with young people, but start interfacing that way with everybody, we will find, in fact, that instead of leading people by fear and control, we're able to lead people by growing our own greatness and by using it. So thank you for your attention, and if you want a few moments of questions, we'll do that, and then we'll close up. Yeah.
You said earlier that children...